So anyway, one of the things that I wanted to bring up right away is that this is National Bike Month, and National Bike Month was basically created by the League of American Bicyclists, which used to be the League of American Wheelmen, the LAW, and they have designated the month of May as Bicycle Month, National Bicycle Month. What does this mean? It means that we're going to try to pay a little bit more attention to bicycles and bicycle awareness, bicycle safety, anything that we can to get people enlightened to the idea that bikes are great and they do wonderful, wonderful things for us all. So one of the big things that's going on right now is this is National Bike to Work Week, and what that means is that in a number of major cities throughout the United States, there is a National Bike to Work Day, and that National Bike to Work Day is this Friday. So this Friday, you'll see a lot of communities that are organizing and getting things together to encourage people to ride to work and to you know, try it out. See what it's like. A lot of people in the United States will find that they live within 5 to 10 miles from work. So it's really not a difficult thing to hop on your bike and ride to work. So that works out really well. And so this is a great opportunity for you to go, you know, I'm going to give this a try. So if you look at the ConnecticutBikeWalk.org website, you will see the list of different locations of places that are sponsoring Bike to Work Day. One of the big ones is in Hartford, in downtown Hartford at the State House. A lot of people are going in there. At 8 o'clock, there will be a public speech by a number of dignitaries, and I am actually leading a ride in. But in the meantime, I believe we have a guest on the radio. Ken Krajewski, is he there? Can he hear me?
Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Ken. Oh, what a great call. This is perfect timing. So anyway, Ken and I go way back because Ken was on the Connecticut Bicycle Coalition board when I was on the Connecticut Bicycle Coalition board many, many years ago. And Ken,
I think we're talking 16 years, Ron.
Oh, my God. Well, you see, you can remember that because you're a younger man than I am. So therefore... So that's good. Really, it was 16 years ago. Is that how long it was? Wow.
Yes.
Amazing.
1999, 2000, 2001.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Bicycle advocacy in Connecticut is a mature political position, and we've been pushing really hard for a long time for bicyclists to be treated as equal citizens who have full use of the transportation infrastructure. And one of the reasons that I love hearing this morning that you're doing this show is because talking about bicycles and talking about getting people on their bicycles is important to securing our rights as cyclists on the road.
Right. Well, it's a, you know, people have to be aware of the fact that we are actually people. We are citizens. We are normal community members. We're doctors. We're lawyers. We're, you know, people that are in your community. We're your next door neighbor. We're your mother, your father, your, you know, your family members. And we're all just advocates for cycling. We just want to ride our bikes. We want to do it in a safe manner.
Yes. I saw a guy who's a professor at Trinity College who has put a 3-foot yardstick on the...
A 3-foot yardstick on...
A rack.
Okay.
So... people, and there's a sign, just like a little red flag or orange flag that he keeps off of the back of it, and it sort of enforces the 3-foot passing rule for cars.
What a brilliant idea. Now, do you remember when that law came out where we had an actual 3-foot law?
It's within the last 3 years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's within the last 3 years. I can't quite remember, but it's an important thing to know that some people perceive that roads may be dangerous.
Right.
There's a reality to that fear, but at the same time, if you're careful and you're wearing proper safety equipment and you're riding appropriately, you should be okay. And that's one of the things to encourage people to do is to get out there and take back that road and say, I belong on this road, and let's ride.
And we do belong on that road. We pay taxes for that road, just like the automobiles do. And we are a vehicle, as per definition by the State Department of Transportation. So it's, you know, it's very important. You're right. There's a few other things you could do, too. You can put flashing lights on the back of your bike. There's a number of wonderful innovations in flashing lights that have come out over the years. And
I was in REI the other day, and the amount of lights that you, I was just looking for a handlebar mount because I have a couple of those LED flashlights that I want to just put on my handlebars without duct tape or something like that. And the amount of lights that you can put on your frame, on your wheels, on your handlebars, on your helmet is amazing. And I think it's really important to do that if you're going to use a bicycle as a second or a primary means of transportation. My wife and I have one car between the two of us in the city of Hartford.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. And our environment thanks you, too. That's a beautiful thing.
Well, I've been trying to think about how we convince people to get out of their cars. It's an extraordinarily difficult, persuasive argument because our infrastructure is based around cars. And people don't really want to move into environments where they can walk and bike to work, particularly because the economy is so difficult. How do you get a job that's within 2 miles of your house?
Right.
Or 4 miles?
Right. Well, we're starting to see a change there. As the millennials have graduated from college with their bachelor degrees that were immediately going to put them into the middle class and found that working at Starbucks is all they can get, they have migrated to the cities. And by moving to the cities, they've also ditched their cars. So this is the beginning. I see this as a really critical time for bicycles because this is the beginning of a solid change that could happen in this country, as it has happened all over Europe. And so I see our timing right now better than it has ever been before. I don't know how you view that, but
I would agree with that, and I feel like we need state and local policies to encourage this transition. And one of the things that helps pushing the political spectrum towards understanding bicycles and making bicycle infrastructure, not just bike lanes, but bike ways and advocating for driver education and giving bicycles tax credits. I feel like my wife and I deserve a tax credit because we don't have two cars on the road in Hartford.
Well,
you do
deserve that. I mean, it's
and so to push for that, we need more people on bicycles. And what, you know, talking about the politics and the rights of it is one thing, but what's your favorite thing about riding a bike, Ron?
I'm free. I'm on my bike and it's me and my bike. And I just feel this freedom that I cannot describe.
Down with that.
Yeah, Fran feels the same way.
Exactly. And I've ridden with both of you guys, and I feel like I'm 7 years old.
It brings you back. It really does. And it's just a wonderful feeling. You're not feeling like you're restricted to or tied down to or anchored to anything that is really, you know, making you lose control. And so it's a great feeling. It's just so free. That's the best word I can describe.
Liberating.
Liberating. There you go. There you go. Very good.
That's a 50-cent word for free.
Okay. I'll take it. That sounds great. So anyway, there's that. The other thing that is really interesting, and you don't have to be particularly fast on your bike to do this, but when you get into high-volume traffic situations on your bicycle, you are oftentimes much faster than a four-wheeled contained vehicle. So you have this ability to actually, especially if there happens to be a bike lane there or something that you can access it safely, you have the ability to beat the cars, which is just tremendous.
Every morning, as my wife and I live in Asylum Hill, and my law firm is on Main Street in Hartford. So every morning I go down Asylum Street, and I pass dozens and dozens and dozens of single-occupant vehicles.
There you go.
And I go move so much faster than them in the city. And it's astonishing to me that, like, so much of people's lives is spent in cars, and it's dead time. It's time that you can't do anything with. It's time that you're sitting behind the wheel waiting for a 3,000-pound vehicle to move your 150, 200 pounds of human mass. And I you know, I've been thinking about how can I communicate with all these single occupancy vehicles and say to them, there's a better way for you to get your body around.
I like that idea right there. Why not have some shirts made up that just say on the back of them, there's a better way?
Well,
I mean, it's obvious. And, you know, I'm always thinking of things like this because, you know, I'm in sales and marketing and that's what I do. So I'm constantly looking at ways to try to grab a hold of people's attention. But,
you know, what I was thinking about is political lawn signs.
Okay.
You know how they have, and some of those lawn signs are like Samba Fest. But if we put political lawn signs instead of saying, you know, elect Malloy for governor,
right.
What if we had political lawn signs that said cars are coffins or there's a better way?
Yikes.
Or why not carpool?
Right.
Or and you put them in high traffic areas where people are sitting at stoplights for three cycles.
Oh, absolutely.
While they wait
yeah.
for it to go through, and just it gives you an opportunity to reinforce your message. Because I mean, for me, the gospel of the bicycle is one of the most important things that we can do to confront suburban sprawl.
If you were on a bicycle right now, you wouldn't be stopped here reading the sign.
Exactly. That's a lot to put on a
It is a lot to put on a sign, but the point is made. The point is definitely made.
Yeah,
that ability to get around, and there's a lot of other factors that go along with this. Of course, you're also maintaining a vehicle, which the average cost of maintaining a four-wheeled gas-burning vehicle in this country is about $8,000 a year. So that's a big chunk of money. That's an awful lot of money. Now you're considering your maintenance on that vehicle. You're considering the cost of the vehicle. You're considering the fact that you have to put gas in that vehicle. You're considering tolls. You're considering parking fees. You're considering all these things, and it adds up to about $8,000. That buys really, really, really nice bicycle, by the way, just in case you want to know. You don't have to spend that kind of money on a bike. You can pick up a bike for a lot less, and you can just enjoy the fact that when you do finally get to your destination of work, instead of looking around now and trying to find that parking space or having to find the assigned parking space that you have, but you pay a tremendous amount of money for every month, it's all gone. It all disappears. It all allows you to be, here we go again, free. And,
yes.
And that's where this becomes very, very important, because it gives you that freedom that a lot of us are looking for these days. We're all looking for something to give us a little more freedom, a little more mobility. Not to mention, if you put it all together, we're talking health and fitness here. We're talking about incredible health and fitness.
Do you need spandex and fancy clothes to ride a bike, Ron?
Absolutely not. You don't have to look like I do to ride a bike. No.
No. Well, it's your living, right?
Well, I'm one of those guys. I've been in the business for a long time. 41 years now, by the way. 41.
Holy cow.
Yeah, can you believe that? I can't. If you had ever said that, you know, I'm going to find a job that I really like and I'm going to stay at it for 41 years. No one says that, but I'm in the bike industry. And as much as it has its challenges, I'm always around people with bikes and around bikes. And it's just
a great
feeling.
And you always have
great
gear.
Yeah, I do.
But you don't need great gear.
You don't.
Because I live in the city. I have two bicycles, one of which is orange and blue for Syracuse, but actually a friend found it.
You know you're talking on the UConn radio network, right?
I have some, you know, yes, I do. I went to UConn Law. How's that?
Yeah, I know. But I'm just teasing you.
My heart
Go ahead.
Is Syracuse undergrad. So, but a friend of mine found it in a creek in Sandy Hook.
There you
Somebody
go.
Had thrown it out, and my other bike I got on Craigslist for $250.
Yeah, so you don't really have to go crazy with this. You don't have to spend a lot of money, and you save tremendous amounts of money, thousands and thousands of dollars. Not to mention that personal time, you know, sitting in a car all day long, you know, sitting and waiting for traffic, and it's just unpleasant.
I was cracking up this morning before I went to court. I was looking at the internet, and a bus company in London has created a bus that allows you to get on a spinning cycle. You know, the spinning thing.
Yeah, so I know it. I teach a bunch of classes.
So you can, you know, anything to make a buck, Ron. I got cases I ain't proud of. You know?
Yeah, well, you know, you got to do what you got to do, Ken.
That's it. But, like, the idea that there's a bus that you can board to go cross town and get on a bicycle to spin.
That it's just crazy.
Instead of actually just riding.
Like, I know. One giant leap backwards.
Yes, I was astonished by it, because I'm like, well, why not just put them on bicycles? It doesn't get that cold in London, and people in Amsterdam ride year-round.
You know, and you know, you talk about the weather, you know, people go, well, you know, what if it's raining all the time? What if it, and, you know, you can buy gear for that. You'll eventually collect good clothing to be able to keep yourself dry. But a friend of mine came up with this great idea. He said, you know, if there's a bike path already, why not put a roof over it made out of solar panels? And then you could generate electricity and also have a covering over the cyclists when they're riding on the bike trail. I thought that was kind of a clever idea. It's genius. It's absolute genius. Thank you, Mark.
However, what that requires is significant public investment in bicycle-based infrastructure.
Correct.
And we can't get there without more people taking... And I think... I don't know if you agree with this, but I think bicycling is more of a lifestyle than simply an activity.
I agree. I think in this country it has become a lot more of a recreational activity because of the nature of it and the nature of people in general in this country. But when you take a look at it from the standpoint of, you know, going over to Europe and going to places where they've been doing it for a long time, it certainly is. It is a lifestyle, but it is also something that's really well accepted. And more people are starting to do that here. I travel into Boston quite often because I sell bicycles and bicycle-related equipment to bike shops. And so I'm in Boston often, and the amount of bicycle activity in Boston is overwhelming. It's amazing to see so many people on bicycles. And it's because, really, it's quicker to get around on the bike than it is to be in your car. And actually, a couple of people that do the same job that I do, who are primarily focused on the Boston market, they don't use their cars to call on bicycle dealers. They use their bikes because they can get to more dealers in one day or more customers in one day than they can if they were to use their car.
So do they use bike trailers to carry their merchandise or their samples?
Yeah, some do. Some pull a trailer. But, you know, you can pack a lot into a laptop computer, and you can do presentations on them. I use a laptop. I also use a tablet when I'm doing presentations, so I can carry a lot of electronic media with me that will help me present well for what I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to sell. And then occasionally I'll bring, you know, I can bring small samples with me too. And I can pack that either into, you know, a set of panniers on the back of a bike, or I can pack it into a small day pack. There's ways that you can do it. Of course, if you're trying to sell bicycles, you're not going to be pulling, you know, six bicycles with you while you're riding. But you can show up on a different bike each occasion, and therefore showing and showcasing that particular bicycle. So there's ways of doing it. You just have to get a little more creative. That's all.
When you talk to these people who are riding around Boston, do they say what the demographic of the people on bicycles is?
I would say the primary demographic of people that are on bicycles in Boston tend to be college-age people. They're usually college students. There are so many universities in the Boston area that there's, you know, there's just a youthful environment there. And they are the ones that you see primarily on bikes. But I also see a number of people, because of the industry that I'm in, I'm seeing people that are working in the bicycle industry or other professions that are using their bikes to ride back and forth to work because they figured it out. You know, it's a lot nicer to ride your bike to work.
Yeah,
you get there and you feel happy. You don't get there and feel really frustrated because you sat in traffic and you got behind that one driver who is always going too slow for you and you need to get around them because you have to get to work and don't they understand that you're just trying to get to work? You know, you don't run into that whole frustration that you get when you get behind the wheel of a car. Because you're always moving forward. And that's the key point right there, is that you're always moving forward.
And so, there's something extraordinarily meditative about riding a bicycle. Like that cadence that you build, it just, and you're more alert because there's higher stakes. You don't have a 3,000-pound exoskeleton.
Sure, sure. That's it. And it's as much as, you know, we have complaints about, well, you know, it's just not safe. You're out there with all those cars and how do you protect yourself and all? Well, you learn very quickly how to become we'll call it a road warrior. You learn how to ride with traffic, because when you learn how to ride with traffic instead of riding in traffic, the safety of your own being becomes much greater. And that's what I try to explain to people. You want to make a left turn up there, you put your hand out, you work your way out to the center line, and you make that left turn. Become one with the traffic. So what you want to do is you want to actually just think of yourself as a vehicle instead of a bicycle. Go beyond the idea of, oh, well, I'm a bike, so I have to stay all the way over here on the right because, you know, I don't want to get hit by cars. You just, if you're going with the flow of traffic, which in heavy traffic, often you're going at least as fast as they are, then get out in the lane. Just get out in the lane because you're not slowing them down at all and you're safer out there. And that's a hard one to teach people. But I know it's taught through the League of American Bicyclists. I know that they have a whole course on how to ride in traffic. There's information out there for learning more. And then you can learn from your local groups, too. We have a group out here called Bike Mansfield, which we have just established. My friend Lon Holkeren has established this to make us more bicycle. We're trying to become a bicycle-friendly town in Mansfield, which is a challenge because I think that the town itself is generally bicycle-friendly, but we have this place called the University of Connecticut, which I am sitting in the middle of right now, and I tend to find, and if anyone out there from UConn is listening and would like to debate this with me, I am wide open on this, but I find this to be possibly the most bike-unfriendly campus that I have ever been on. And it's because there's just too many cars here and there's too much allowance of four-wheel vehicles here on campus. And there are no bike lanes. There are a couple of Sharrows on the road out here. They removed all the 30 and 40 bike racks and put in these 6 bike racks. It's just not bicycle friendly here. So that's something that we would like to eventually address here with Bike Mansfield. We've done a few things. We have a wonderful transportation center over in the new store center where you can ride your bike up to work and you can put your bike in a locker there and you can take a shower and then you can go to work. And that's a really cool thing that was established in the transportation center and store center. So there's things that we're doing here that are really helping a lot, but we need to get more and more awareness out there. I think that's the point.
I think that the university presidency's office, far be it from me to bite the hand that is feeding us, but towards a greater democratic debate, there is, you know, President Herbst doesn't feel to me like she has been open to certain concepts and ideas, and one of those concepts and ideas should be greater use of bicycles on campus as a tool. And to go back to what you were saying before about Bike Mansfield, Hartford just opened a new, or I should say people in the city of Hartford have just opened a new thing called BC Co.
Okay, what is that?
Okay, so you're aware that bicycle advocacy tends to be extraordinarily white, right? There's limited racial diversity within the bike advocate community. And
unfortunately, so, yes.
Yes, it will, because if we look at it demographically speaking, the non-white populations in Connecticut have had different battles to fight. And it's almost a luxury of a battle to fight this as a transportation thing. I mean, I think that it's a social justice and an economic justice fight for bicycle rights. But Tony Chirolis, I think you might know him.
Mm-hmm.
He helped start Bike Walk Connecticut back when it was a Central Connecticut Bicycle Alliance.
Right.
And he has partnered up with what's called the Center for Latino Progress. The executive director there is a woman named Janiel Terron. And what they've done is they've kind of recreated what we had at the Connecticut Bicycle Coalition, which was the bike barn. Remember the Recycle a Bike Barn?
I do remember that, yes.
And the CBC had a BMX team using federal weed and seed monies and using city police athletic league monies and things like that, and CBC's own fundraising. What Tony's done is slightly different. He's got a Recycle a Bike program that gives free bicycles to young people, teenagers, and 20-somethings who come in and learn bike mechanic skills and do this, because throughout the city you see tons of kids riding with no brakes.
Oh, God,
and
yes. Yep.
You've seen it before.
Oh, yeah.
So what Tony's trying to do there is create bike mechanic skills, but also make sure there are safe bikes on the road. And he's doing soft employment, job training skills, and things like that as part of it. But community residents can also go in. There's 3 or 4 bike stands. Like, I had to change the front brakes on my Surly the other day. So I got my front brakes and then the pads, and then I just walked into BC Co., threw my bike on the stand. They have a full complement of tools. I walked in, pulled the Allen wrenches that I need, swapped out my brakes, adjusted the pads ever so slightly, and there you go. And so he's got an annual membership fee, or you can do volunteer labor for him to get access to this. And not only that, what he's doing is he's teaching adults. He's got women's classes, like how to change a flat tire.
That's wonderful. So where is this located?
It's on 95 Park Street in Hartford.
Okay.
And it's called BC Co. And what I think you should do, if you're going to continue to have this bicycle talk show,
mm-hmm.
You should have Tony on as a guest.
Oh, I will certainly do that. I think that would be a great thing.
I am a poor salesman for it, because he has a vision. Tony was in Champaign-Urbana. For his graduate studies. He's an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this amazing program in Champaign-Urbana in Illinois, and so, which is a college town, right?
Right.
And he's trying to do something like that. So I think more programs like what we're describing, like Bike Mansfield, like BC Co., are needed. We need young bicycle entrepreneurs to start helping build this community of bicycles and bicycling infrastructure, so Tony isn't necessarily getting a lot of government funds. What they're doing is getting some grant money, but he's, you know, working on building this program. And that's the kind of thing that I think we need to be looking at. I mean, there's a million different ways to approach this transportation problem.
Sure. I remember years ago, there was a group out of New Britain. The Friendship Center had a bicycle program. I think it was called the Friendship Center. And it was, they had a bicycle program there, and they were taking, you know, inner city kids, basically, and bringing them in and teaching them how to fix bikes. And
that
was
in New Britain with
it was
Cliff
New Britain.
Parker and Peter
right,
Barr,
right, with Cliff
right?
Parker. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Cliff was the welder who decided to get into bicycles. And yeah, that program stopped, but it's the same kind of thing. And the problem is when these programs get established for 10 years, like Connecticut Bicycle Coalitions, and then disappear, we have a lack of continuity.
Right.
And so
our Connecticut Department of Transportation does not respect bicyclists in any number of ways, shapes, or forms.
We used to kid about them and call them the Department of Cars and Trucks. Do you remember that?
Yes, or the Department of Tar.
The Department of Tar, there you go.
Right, the DOT, yeah. The Department of Tar.
Yeah.
And fighting that monolithic agency has been tough. And, you know, one of the reasons or aspects of bicycle advocacy that we could focus on is getting CONDOT to actually start putting more of its budget towards bicycles. One of the things that kills our state budget is maintenance on roads. The
right.
DOT's road maintenance budget, and we have such a high road maintenance budget because we have so many miles traveled per vehicle on the highways that we have to maintain them. And what we need to do is push and say, look, help us get more people on bicycles, Department of Transportation, so we can lessen not only our road budget, but our carbon footprint.
Right.
We haven't even talked about bicycles as a way to combat climate change.
Oh, no. Yeah, there's so many areas that we can touch on this show, which I think are going to be really important because this is the type of thing we need. We need more things like a radio program that talks about bicycles and talks about bicycling. We need to explore all the different avenues of this to see, you know, what it is that we can do to improve what we have out there right in front of us. And so I'm always looking for ideas. If you're out there listening, if you listen to our podcast afterwards and you're listening there too, please feel free to send over an email to me. I'll actually give you my personal email address on this. It's pedlinron@gmail.com. So it's pedlinron@gmail.com. So please let me hear some feedback here. I'd love to hear it. And, if you have a subject you'd like to explore, that'd be great. If you have a guest that you think could be on the show or should be on the show, I think that would be really good, too, because, we need to open up everyone's eyes as to who we are as bicyclists on the road and the opportunities that are available to cycling on the road. Very, very important.
Yeah. One thing that I think I've noticed in Hartford lately is I've been riding in Hartford for 18 years. I moved to Hartford in 1998. And one of the reasons I moved was because I got a newspaper job at the Great Hartford Advocate.
Right.
And I could bicycle. I got an apartment in Asylum Hill, and I could bicycle from my apartment down to the Advocate, and my beat for the Advocate didn't require a car, like covering, say, Litchfield County or Windham or Tallinn County would.
Sure.
So it was fantastic. It was a dream. I was like, okay. And over the 18 years, I think now is the time that I have seen the most people on bicycles who I do not recognize.
Yes, isn't that interesting? I've noticed the same thing. I see so many more people that I used to know everyone that rode a bike. If you rode a bike, I knew you because it was a small community, but the community is growing.
Yeah, it's really funny. We had, when we were arguing with the Planning and Zoning Commission here in Hartford over the publicly financed boondoggle known as the Yard Goat Stadium.
Oh, boy.
I was arguing for bike racks. I was testifying in front of Planning and Zoning Commission, and I said, we want 1% of all the seats to have bike racks. It's not a hard goal.
Right.
You're having 6,000 seats. We should have 600 bike racks.
Right.
Which is, actually, that's 10%. We said 1%, so we only wanted
60 bike racks.
Right,
sure.
Enough room for 60 bicycles.
Perfect.
And one of the members of the Planning and Zoning Commission said, I know every person who rides a bike in the city of Hartford. We don't have enough cyclists for 60 bike racks. And I was...
Oh, come on.
We joke. Ever since that moment, we have joked. And we're like, oh, the P&Z commissioner knows that guy on a bike.
Sure.
He knows that guy on a bike. It's become a joke, but this is how government... And, I mean, he's a volunteer. We have to thank him for his service on the P&Z Commission, but
Sure. Clearly
he's adult.
Well, he doesn't see, you know, what's really happening around him because he's in his car.
He does actually ride, but at the same time, I'm sitting there saying to myself, like, dude, I don't know everybody who bikes.
Right.
I mean, honestly, I really don't.
No, I don't either.
Aside from all in Hartford, Hartford's 120,000 people. Only 65% of the people who live in this community own or utilize cars. 35% of the city of Hartford is car free.
Is that
Doesn't
right?
Mean that,
wow.
Yes, because well, remember we talked about the socioeconomic justice problem.
Right.
It's expensive
right.
to have a car. You said it's $8,000 a year to have a car.
Yes, it is.
If you are one of the 40% of the people who live in Hartford who is at or below the poverty level, you don't have $8,000 a year.
No.
To put into four wheels, you can't buy tires. You can't buy gas.
Right.
If you do have a car, I've actually gotten into collisions with what I call the Hartford hat trick. No license, no registration, no insurance.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Which is why you have to buy uninsured coverage
That's
for
correct.
Your own car.
Right.
Because people who can actually afford a car, sometimes they can't afford the other amenities that you need. So Hartford has this situation where we have people who can't afford insurance, but they need the car because our mass transit system is terrible.
Right.
And here's actually, as we're talking, and I know this is your first show, I don't want to shift gears immediately, but
no,
one of the
okay.
things that I want to bring up is Vision Zero. Have you heard of this?
No.
Okay, so, and I have a guest for you too, a gentleman named Nat Gale. He is the son of Hartford City Council member John Gale. And Nat Gale works in transportation in Los Angeles. Nat grew up in Hartford, Hartford Public High School graduate.
Mm-hmm.
But he has taken his considerable skill set to help develop the city of Los Angeles transportation policy. He works in the mayor's office. And Vision Zero is a Swedish concept, of course, which combats the central tenet of American transportation policy, which is vehicle flow and efficiency. Our road designs say, okay, we know that 30 people a year are going to die around this curve, but because it moves cars quicker, we're going to sacrifice those 30 lives. Or if we look at a grander scale, more people die every month on American highways than died in 9/11.
Right.
But it's an acceptable loss of life because our economy demands single occupancy vehicles.
Right, right. It's
what
driven
Vision
by
Zero, what Vision Zero says coming out of Sweden is that no loss of life for transportation is acceptable.
Wow.
Period. End stop. We are no longer going to give in to the cold hard logic of engineering. We huh. are going to be compassionate, and we are going to design transportation policies and options which state no loss of life is the ultimate goal. We should not fear dying when we walk across the street.
Wow. Wow. That's Sweden?
Sweden, and it's a Swedish concept.
Okay.
And American cities are starting to implement Vision Zero, Los Angeles being one of them. So I, in full disclosure, my wife, Wilda Lise Bermudez, is on city council in Hartford as a Working Families Party member.
Mm-hmm.
And the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta flew her down to Atlanta recently to attend a walking summit. And that was one of the things that was brought up that CDC is starting to examine is Vision Zero as a national policy.
Wow. Yeah, I like it.
So you, there are guests that you could get on to discuss Vision Zero, and I think this is one of the themes that we need to be looking at as we head forward in 21st century transportation policy planning.
Okay. All right. That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Very good tip. Certainly look into that. We also have Norman
Garrick
here on campus, who is he is Mr. Alternative Transportation. We love Norman. Norman's a great guy.
Yeah.
And when we were on the Connecticut Bicycle Coalition together, we used to use Norman for technical purposes because he was very aware of transportation issues and very good at it. So I'm going to try to rope him in here too, if I could. Recently, I spoke with a student of his who had the pleasure of taking one of his classes up here on campus, and he said, of all the classes he's taken at UConn, taking Professor Garrick's class was probably the most rewarding class he ever has taken, because he is just so positive about doing it the right way. And so, you know, there we have a resource right here in Connecticut, right here.
Yeah, Norman is he really talks a lot about highway removal.
Right.
Right. And one of the struggles that we're having at Hartford right now is the Aetna Viaduct. You know, they call it by the corporation who benefits most from it. And that's the section of elevated highway over, well, Aetna is also right next to it, too.
Right.
It's the section of elevated highway that runs through Hartford. And highway design has been a terrible thing for stitching together urban fabrics, because highways basically sliced through our cities.
So you mean the S-turns that everyone wrecks their car on?
Yes.
There's multiple accidents in that
yes.
section. Multiple.
So the basis is that was built in 1964. It had a 40-year lifespan. Now it is 2016. So it is 12 years past its planned for lifespan. And what are we going to do to replace it?
Mm-hmm.
And the argument and conversations that the DOT is leading, they're planning for the next 50 years of vehicle usage to be the same as it is now. And when I go into these meetings, I say, if this is the engineering assumption that you're taking, we're dooming humanity.
Right. And things are going to change. There's going to be a change. I know that we have growth in population, and that will always occur. But I think it's going to be a different type of growth. And I think that we're all going to have to start paying a lot closer attention to our health and our well-being, and getting people out of motorized transportation is a great idea in which to do that. So there's a lot of things to look at. But the cost is what's really the problem. And the cost of maintaining the highways and the roads.
The cost of rebuilding Interstate 84, the viaduct that I'm talking about, and everybody knows, like, so from about exit 44.
Oh, I know
to
it about well.
Exit to crossing the Connecticut River, like mm-hmm. exit 50. That's going to be in the tens of billions of dollars.
Right.
Hartford is not a city like Boston that can demand a big dig.
Right.
So the thing is, when the DOT is looking at the Aetna Viaduct, and you know who is one of the most learned and educated people about this viaduct issue is Francisco Gomes.
Remember him. Sure.
Another former CBC bike or Connecticut Bicycle Coalition board of directors.
I remember him well.
15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he's another guest you could have on. This is.
Sure.
I hope you're thinking that this is productive.
Well, this is great. I'm gonna resource you again, because I'm writing things down as fast as I can here, but I will probably have to talk to you again about this, just because I want to go over this and maybe come up with a strategy here so we can continue to deliver the positive message of bicycles. Because
yes,
it's important.
I hope this is making for good radio for all the people out there in radio land.
Well, we'll find out. I think so. Fran's nodding. She's sitting over there nodding away. So I think it's all good.
But the rebuilding of the 84 viaduct is tens of billions of dollars. It's going to destroy buildings. Yet the DOT is planning for 80,000 cars a day to continue on that highway into the city of Hartford. As a commute for the next 50 years. And we can't afford that kind of carbon output if we're going to actually effectuate and combat climate change.
Right, right.
So it's like it gets back to the policy conversation that we're having. How do we shift the Department of TAR from continuing these assumptions that America is going to continue to use vehicles at the pace that it does? It can't. It's
right.
Suicidal for us as a country to continue to use vehicles at this pace.
Correct.
And
And we have to look at other alternatives. And obviously, bicycles are near and dear to you and I because we believe in them and we understand them. But we may
and
have
we love
to start,
them.
And we do. But we may have to start looking at hubs of which you know you would possibly if you lived. Let's say you lived way out here in Mansfield. It's not very far out. But if you lived way out here in Mansfield, and you worked in Hartford. Maybe you would drive your car to a hub that was outside of the city. You would leave your car there and then transport yourself in from there. Kind of like the New Britain busway that is in place right now, where it is accommodating not only the buses so they can get in and out of the city fast and carry lots of people in and out, but also there is a bike lane there, too, that you could actually ride your bike on the busway, which is another way in.
The frustrating aspect of the busway's bike lane is that it stops at Newington Center.
Does it really?
Yeah, so it's only for 4.5 of the 9 miles.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was one of the... It's,
who was in charge of that? Well, we don't want to...
Mike Sanders.
Okay.
The guy from DOT who, you know, DOT was impossible to deal with on the busway because... So I've talked a lot about Asylum Hill.
Mm-hmm.
As you slope down to the southeast from Asylum Hill in Hartford, you have a neighborhood called Frog Hollow. It's where the Columbia Bicycle Company was, you know.
I know it well.
Pope.
Sure.
So there's Columbia Street and Pope Park in Frog Hollow.
Right, right.
So the Interstate I-84 viaduct and train tracks that have run through there create they rent asunder the fabric of the city. So the two connections, the two main roads connecting Frog Hollow and Asylum Hill are both highway on-ramps, Broad Street and Sigourney Street.
Right,
right,
right.
And the one street that was not, that was a nice, calm little street, it was called Flower Street.
Okay.
And named after one of the mayors of Hartford in the 1850s. The DOT closed down Flower Street in 2013. And the Federal Rail Administration demanded that the DOT close down all at-grade railroad crossings in on the busway, right? No at-grade railroad crossings should be in the Federal Rail Administration has a policy federally to sort of make roads safer for intersections with trains by closing down at-grade intersections between roads, between car roads and train tracks. However, the crazy part about them closing down Flower Street to pedestrian and bicycle traffic, you know, they promised us they would build us a $4.5 million overpass, and that promise wasn't worth the paper that it was printed on.
Right.
And we knew they were lying to us from the get-go on the busway on closing down Flower Street. But they left at-grade rail intersections in West Hartford and Newington on the busway open. But they closed us down in Hartford. So the only ways you can get back and forth between these two really vibrant, important neighborhoods in the city of Hartford is now going on extraordinarily dangerous roads.
Yeah, Broad Street going out and going out on Route 5. I know I've done that because when I do bike to work, I ride down a Newington bicycle afterwards often. And so I have to get to Newington. And it's busy. It's busy.
Yeah.
For sure.
You know, we're working as hard as we can, and I think I love the idea of this radio show. I don't think we've ever had a bicycle radio show in Connecticut.
Yes. All right. Good. Well, I don't believe we have, and I think this is going to give us a voice, and we will be here weekly on Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. on WHUS Radio. So that is a good thing. And Ken, thank you so much for listening and calling. This was a really wonderful surprise to have you call in. I am assuming that I will see you on Friday morning at 8 o'clock at the State House. Is that true?
This coming Friday?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll be there.
It's Bike to Work. It's the National Bike to Work Day, and it is at the State House. I will be leading a contingent out of Willimantic. We are leaving from the Ocean State Job Lot / BJ's parking lot at 5:15 in the morning. We are going to ride on the roads partly, and we are also going to pick up the Hop River Trail in Columbia, and we're going to ride that up to Bolton Notch. Then we are going to take a couple of small roads out of Bolton Notch, bring us back over to the Charter Oak Trail, and ride on in. I did this a few years ago, sort of as a publicity stunt, sort of, if you want to call it that. But I had the Hartford Current following me that wrote a really nice, Lori Riley from the Hartford Current wrote a really nice article for me and gave exposure to, you know, the fact that this guy is going to ride all the way from here to there and he's going to stop at all these different places with his laptop computer and do his job. What's your excuse? And that was the idea. And so I've continued that tradition, and we are planning on riding in. So I'll be picking people up all along the way once we get to the Charter Oak Trail. The cool thing, a few years ago when we got to Silver Lane, we had 25 riders because we kept picking people up along the way. And when we got to Silver Lane, we just took one of the lanes. We just took a lane. We occupied it. No one said anything. No one tooted their horns. No one got mad at us. We just occupied the lane and rode into Hartford. So there is safety in numbers. There was just an amazing solidarity. It was just a cool thing to do. It was totally cool. So I am planning on doing that again. Again, people can contact me on that if they wish. A number of my local friends are joining me on this. And anyway, that's so we plan on being there by 8 o'clock. That if I time it out correctly and we don't get any flat tires, I think we'll be there on time. So anyway, hope to see a lot of people there. There is also another bike to work right here in Storrs, Connecticut, right at the town square in the new store center. And that will be run by the Bike Mansfield folks and Amber Pierce, our local professional bicycle racer who lives here as a resident of Mansfield, will be handing out water bottles from Cannondale and some other goodies from Store Center Cycle. And then also she will be handing out, I think they're giving, Dog Lane Cafe is actually giving away free muffins to anyone who rides to work that day. So there's a lot of cool stuff going on here locally right here in Mansfield too. And anyway, I hope to see you on Friday and we can talk some more.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, thank you so much. And thank you and Fran for taking the time out of your busy schedules to create this really important dialogue.
Great, Ken.
Thanks,
very good.
Ken. It was great to have you on.
Oh, this was so much fun. It sure beats being a lawyer.
Well, someone's got to do that too, so.
Yes. And with that, I am going to go put on my attorney hat and bicycle to work.
All right, Ken. Great. Great talking with you. Our guest was Ken Kraevsky from Hartford,
thanks,
Connecticut, a local advocate for cycling. And also, what else can I say about you, Ken? You're just the guy.
I don't know. Not a dime back.
Not a dime back.
Oh,
there it is. There it is. Now you are completely disclosed.
Yes. Get the
right
facts and come back and see me.
Right. Very good. I will talk to you very soon. Take care,
right,
Ken.
Out, man.
Thank
Bye.
You for calling.
Well, that was fun.
That was fun. Ken is just, he is the people's advocate for everything. He's a wonderful guy, and I love Ken. He's one of those that watches out for others.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's kind of one of those special guys. In the bicycle world, we actually call that a good wheel.
Oh.
And so Ken definitely gets the Good Wheel Award. If you feel that you're out there and are doing things that are really positive for bicycles, then maybe we could come up with we could bring you on and we could give you an attaboy Good Wheel or attagirl Good Wheel.
Yes,
Award.
We definitely welcome people calling in. We've got just 5 more minutes left of the show today, but if you would like to call in, the number to call is 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can write in at radionaturopath@gmail.com right now. And you can also text us at 860-486-9487. We'd love to hear from you if you want any questions or comments. It's a great week to celebrate bicycling. Now, there are people who ride their bikes to work all the time. They ride all year. I mean, it's hard for you because of what you do, because you have to travel so far and ride. But, you know, on a day, on this week, you make an effort to do it.
Right.
It's just that, you know, you have to travel hundreds of miles.
Well, you know, I just don't have that kind of range left in my body. So, you know, I can only go so far.
I know, but, and you'd only be able to hit so many shops in
exactly.
a day.
And
but there are people who live locally who ride every day and log lots of miles just commuting, you know, and so that's a really great way to go. And, you know, you have to do things like, I don't know, leave clothes at work or carry clothes with you. You know, there's different things that you can do. But and then there are, of course, people that you see all the time around just riding bicycles for transportation, because that's
sure.
what they have.
And you know, if you really start to think about it, I had a friend who he worked in Glastonbury, mm-hmm. and he lives in Mansfield. So that's a pretty good trip, because you know, you're gonna drive, you know, it's at least 30 miles one way out there, and then 30 miles back. So you got a 60 mile bicycle ride in front of you. Now, you know, David was a very strong cyclist, and that was not it was not something that was out of his ability, but it was, you know, after a long day at work, it was a little too much. So he would basically drive in on Monday, and he would bring all of his change of clothes for a week, and then he would ride his bike home, ride back in on Tuesday. He would alternate. So he would only travel one way of the distance, and that's the way he did it. I also have another friend who would drive his vehicle, his four-wheeled behemoth, to a parking lot, and then he would sorry, I had to say it. And then he would simply ride his bike in from there. And by doing that, he said he would drive his car to the point where the traffic would just start to build, and then he would pull over and park it in a commuter parking lot and ride his bike in. So where the traffic was the worst and where he got the most frustrated being in his car, he was on his bike, and it was so much easier because he never stopped going forward.
So before we wrap it up, I wanted to shout out to Teague, which is the so there is an event. It's called Wheels for Meals, and it's okay. So and I want to tell you about it.
And you're trying to find it over
there.
Yeah, there
it is.
Sure.
Okay. So so this organization, TEEG, they are having their fifth annual Wheels for Meals Summer Food Bike Challenge. It's on May 21st, 2016, and it supports a program that provides free lunch to youth 18 and under for 10 weeks every summer. Rides and sponsors are needed to make the event a high-level success. You can register for it on bikereg.com, and there are three courses. There's a 15 mile course, there's a 35 mile course, and there's a 60 mile course. And the starting location is at Teague, which is on Thatcher Road in Thompson. Well, it's North Grovernordale. It's 15 Thatcher Road at North Grovernordale. Which is the Teague headquarters. 15 Thatcher Road in North Grovernordale. And, 60 mile ride goes off at 8 a.m. and I believe registration begins at 7 a.m. So you can register at Bike Ridge. I imagine you can also register at you can register the day of. All right. So so that's it for this is our first episode of Bicycle Talk. It will be attached to episode number 81 of Radio Naturopath. If you're going to listen, if you didn't get to hear all of it and you'd like to listen to it on podcast, it will be available at whus.org. You can also subscribe to it on iTunes, or you can listen to it at Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, Radio Naturopath on Facebook. And next week, we'll separate them out. There'll be two separate shows, and we'll upload them separately. So once again, you've been listening to 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch. This has first been Radio Naturopath
and
Bicycle Talk.
Bicycle Talk
with
Ron
Fran
Manizza.
Storch and Ron Manizza. Right. And we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath and Bicycle Talk here at 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors.